This is episode number 794 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about New York Comic Con and some of the August comics sales numbers. And our comics this week will be Slam, The Next Jam number 1, Secret Empire number 10, Giant Days number 29, Dodgeball Teens number 7, and Amazing Spider-Man number 31.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here as always with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Fantastic because I'm here with you. I'm talking about comic books. I have a lot of Spidey comics to talk about. Actually, all three of these comics today, Slam, Giant Days, and Spidey. Holy cow.
Good.
What a great, great week of reading for me.
Excellent.
But we're going to get into that in a few minutes, Matthew. Let's start with some New York Comic Con news. Now, The Beat has talked about the programming that has now gone up on the New York Comic Con website. So if you are going to New York Comic Con, all of the panels, all that stuff is now up. You can go and start planning what your weekend is going to look like at New York Comic Con. And they say, it's time. Trade in those sandals and Pim's caps for corduroy and pumpkin spice lattes. As fall falls over us, another rite of the season is unfolding New York Comic Con. And to kick things off, the full slate of programming is up, although not with full panel descriptions on one of the pages. Our pals at NYCC are working on getting the full listing, and we'll share it with you as soon as they do. In the meantime, despite cries that NYCC is not about comics, you'll notice that 107 of the 266 panels are indeed comics-focused, with another 42 covering graphic novels, although there is overlap. You'll note that also there are 58 TV panels and 21 movie panels, so the people like their media panels. Mm-hmm. Also, 35 diversity panels because people love moving forward as a society and exploring the issues of a diverse fan culture. Also of note, the theater at Madison Square Garden is back as a venue, and new this year, the New York Public Library, the main branch, the one with the lions from Ghostbusters, will be hosting a day of panels. So busy, busy time as always. The Beat will be flooding the zone with a battalion of reporters as always. We still have a few openings on the team. If you'd like to cover it for us, email comicsbeat@gmail.com if you want to join the squad. So one of the reasons I wanted to read that is that if you are interested in doing some freelance coverage of New York Comic Con, give them a call.
There you go.
You know, reach out, shoot them an email, and that might be a good way to get your name out there if you're looking to get into comics journalism. And The Beat, I feel, is one of the last bastions of comics journalism. So that's very exciting. But also, 107 comics panels, 42 graphic novels panels, 58 TV, 21 movie, 35 panels on diversity. That sounds like a pretty good spread.
Yeah, it is a good one. I mean, you don't want it to be all comics. I mean, that would be very boring. But again, I like how they're kind of answering the charge of, oh, no, we're all about comics. Here's all the panels we're doing about comics.
Right. I think that it would be fair to say you have to do a little more work mm-hmm. to find the comics now than you did in the past. But certainly they're still serving the comics audience there,
yeah.
Especially because a lot of those comics also happen to be multimedia properties as
yes.
well. And so, but what I would do is I know that it's cool that on the NYCC site, you can go and you can download the mobile app too, but you can basically plan out your itinerary for every day of the show that you're going to be there. What panels are at what time, you could sort of plan out that, and then you could print it out because that's what you and I have done in years past, mm-hmm. Is certainly planned out, like what panels we have to see, what events we're going to go to, especially now that stuff is off-site.
All over the place.
It's important to really have a game plan of like making sure you can get to where you need to be without missing anything that you want to see.
Now, were the first panels we ever did at New York Comic Con? I want to say I think one of the first panels I ever did was at New York Comic Con. It was the webcomic one.
Yes.
And I did another one. I think I did two that weekend. Oh, I also hosted the matching up of creators and writers.
Right, the Buddy Scalera, the one that he does now at those shows.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that was 2009 maybe?
Yeah.
So long time ago.
Long time ago. They forgot all about us.
We have tried to get panels included at New York Comic Con since then. Didn't work out so well.
No.
So yeah, unfortunately, it may be still about comics, not necessarily about Secret Identity.
Yes.
Anymore. Which is sad, but things grow and they evolve, and what are you going to do?
Hey, expose sang it.
What?
Seasons change, people change.
I'm just going to say this, Matthew. I did not get an email from ReadPop that said, hey, we heard Secret Identity was ending.
Yes.
We would love for you and Matt to come and do a Secret Identity Show 800 finale panel at New York Comic Con on Stage A.
Yep.
I did not receive that email.
No, we bumped Ninja Turtles.
So New York Comic Con, you done messed up.
Yep.
Now you don't have that opportunity anymore. All right. On to other interesting news, Matthew. August comics numbers. This is also from over at The Beat. Don't call it a comeback. Comics and graphic novel sales were up 12% in dollars compared to July, with new events finding an audience. It seems that although Marvel won the month of August, DC had the top three periodicals, with Dark Knight's Metal number one, the top book, followed by two Tom King Batman outings. Very Secret Empire and Generations comic rounded out the top 10. Will Legacy and Dark Knights be enough to reverse the somewhat dismal 2017 so far? So let's talk about a few of the stats that I pulled this week.
Okay.
Top 10 publishers, Matthew. I'm going to give you their dollar share and their unit share.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Marvel, 35.01% dollar share, 39.52% unit share. So Marvel running between 35 and 40% of the industry. DC, 28.18 dollar share, 31.09 unit share. So you've got Marvel basically taking up 40% of unit share, DC 30% of unit share. Then you have Image Comics coming in at 10.06% dollars, 9.23% units. So basically Image has 10% of the market.
Yep.
IDW is there with 4.81 and 3.69 respectively at number four. Dark Horse 3.16 and 2.18 at number five. So top five, Marvel, DC, Image, IDW, Dark Horse. Now 6 through 10, Dynamite, Boom, Titan Comics, Viz Media, and Oni Press.
Mm.
There is your top 10 of your comic book publishers for the month of August. Your comics shipped. Marvel shipped 106 comics in the month of August, which is a lot.
Yeah.
DC shipped 78. Image shipped 62. IDW 56. Dark Horse 20. Dynamite 30. And Boom 25. So it's kind of impressive that some of these other publishers are able to grab a decent percentage of market share with less books shipped for the month. And your top 10 comics for the month, as was mentioned before, Dark Knight's Metal was number one, followed by Batman 28 and Batman 29, then Secret Empire 10, which you're going to talk about this week, Generations All-New Wolverine and Wolverine number one, Secret Empire 8 and 9, Generations Mighty Thor and Unworthy Thor number one, Star Wars number 34, and Star Wars number 35 were your top 10 books for August. So basically, Star Wars, Secret Empire, Generations, and Batman.
Yeah, Generations is really giving, I mean, it's giving me an excitement about Marvel. I've picked up every one of them that have come out and really liked it. But again, you're almost looking at Marvel seems to be running away with the events, and it doesn't mean anybody's liking them, because I hate to say, I think I'm in the minority for people that like the Generations thing going on right now. I say it to, you know, comic book buddies going, "Duh, loving Generations." Yeah, that sucks. Why are you liking it? So it's really odd. And then when you also go, you know, I go to three or four different shops other than our local comic shop, and I'm seeing a lot more Marvel in stacks on the shelves. So those are the orders. Those are not necessarily the sales. And I think that that is kind of something that it's a telling thing, because right now Marvel owns the majority of the market share, but they're under the most scrutiny for the product that they're putting out right now.
Right.
So kind of interesting.
Well, and we know that comic readers buy stuff out of momentum, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as we are wrapping up Secret Identity, I have started to really take a look at what I'm buying every week. And I've already started to cull it massively.
Yeah, same with me.
So I am very quickly whittling down the amount of titles that I'm buying in print. Jamal Igel posted an interesting story, and I didn't pull it, but on his Facebook page that showed that comic sales are actually up overall.
Yes.
And a lot of that has to do with digital.
Yep.
And it was looking at digital too, and also graphic novels. And I think what we're starting to see happen is that while sales of individual issues may be struggling in certain areas, trades are doing good and the digital comics are doing pretty good. So altogether, the overall picture for comics is not that bad. It's when you start to focus just on the floppies that you start to get a little bit worried. So
and you can almost see in the future, right, as you were saying that, I'm thinking in the next couple of years, you could almost see companies saying, look, we're just going to do everything digital and then we're going to collect them in a trade paperback that you can buy.
Which, I mean, they should switch to that model today. I mean, I know that to some people is blasphemy, but if you're putting out 6-issue arcs in trade or even 4-issue arcs in trade and selling them for $10, to me, like, I'm totally down for
that.
Yeah,
I would be if it was reasonable like that, if they didn't all of a sudden go, okay, you're going to get 19 of them.
And the thing is, like, as time goes on, I am less enthusiastic about the idea of having all of these boxes of comics in my basement and more enthusiastic about having trades on my bookshelf that I can go to at any point in time and pull them up. Like, I mean, obviously you have an insane setup here
that's where you and I differ.
Yeah. I mean, you can come to Matt's house and you can read any comic you want and you find it pretty easily. But for a lot of us, I mean, we just have boxes of comics down in the basement where if I just had the trades of them all. And I know people like Chewy have gone out and gotten their stuff bound, right?
Yeah.
So they could put them on their shelf. Like, that's a great idea too. I think we're doing all right. But anyways, I'm going to start off this week because we're going to talk about comics now. And I'm going to start off with a book from Boom, the aforementioned Boom in the top 10 of publishers. And it's from their Boombox imprint. And it is a book that I loved the first volume of, and that is Slam. It is the roller derby comic. Mm-hmm. And so this is called Slam, the Next Jam. And it's issue number one of this new arc, of course, created by Pamela Ribon and Veronica Fish. Now, Veronica Fish is doing covers for this series now, but I don't think she's the issue-to-issue artist now. This is written by Pamela Ribon, one of the co-creators, illustrated by Marina Julia, colors by Marissa Louise, and letters by Jim Campbell. The cover is by Veronica Fish, and the editor is Shannon Waters on this one. So what happened at the end of the first arc of Slam is that you have two friends, and their code names are Can Can, who is sort of new to roller derby, and she's not that great yet, and she's starting to find herself a little bit and find her confidence, but she's not super talented yet when it comes to roller derby. And then you have Knockout, who is like the budding superstar of this roller derby league. And what happened was they had a bout at the end of the last arc, and Can Can got hurt. And so Knockout, who was on the other team, basically walked away from her team to help her friend who was hurt and get her medical attention and take her out of there and stuff like that. And because of that, she has been put on probation because she basically abandoned her team. And so we start off this one, and there is a team meeting, and they're making posters and stuff for the next bout that's coming up, and they're talking about how Knockout is on probation. And that's kind of the running joke now, is that she's kind of in trouble, and the team hasn't told her whether or not she's going to be able to participate in their next bout. So they're talking about how kind of awkward that is, and, you know, some people are saying, I think it's cool what she did. You know, I don't get why people are so upset. And you have somebody else saying, you don't ditch your team during a bout. If I were them, I'd boot her permanently. And so the girls are having this conversation, and then all of a sudden, Can Can walks in the room, and her arm is in a sling because she really hurt her shoulder, and she's in rough shape. And they all kind of hang out at this place where it's like a community center where they hold meetings for the league. It's at the Eastside Roller Girls Utility Office Conference Room, Art Department meeting. So these are girls from all different teams that are working on the posters and stuff. And so the gossip around is like, I can't believe this one left the team to go help her friend and all this kind of stuff. And so then Can Can walks in and things get awkward. And you see that neither one of them are happy right now, because Can Can feels bad that she got her friend in trouble. And you have Knockout, who feels bad because her team wants to disown her now. And so as that drama is going on, and the running theme here is that, you know, when things get awkward, it takes all the fun out of this thing that you joined because you wanted camaraderie and you wanted to be part of a group. And now the drama is kind of ruining it. So there's a new girl who comes into the comic in this one. I think her name is Kristen. And she is someone who is always kind of hanging around and helping out. And she's one of the rookies. And we really don't know her story, but it seems like she is wanting to be there a lot more than wanting to be home. And so you have another moment where you have Knockout, who's up in the bleachers, and she's watching her team practice. And you have Can-Can, who comes up and says, have you heard yet? Have they told you anything? Nope. And the two of them are sitting there talking, and you'd see people are giving them the eagle eye, especially like the team captain of Knockout's team is mad at her for continuing to hang out with somebody from another team. And so you see that that's really kind of sucking the fun out of the roller derby stuff. But then you start to get the backstory of this other girl, Kristen, who has just joined. You're starting to see what the girls who are on these teams do when they can't skate, because sometimes you're injured and sometimes you're suspended and all that kind of stuff. And so trying to hang out with your team and be part of the team when you can't participate is rough. And that actually brought me back to, I remember when I was in high school, like when I blew out my knee the first time and I couldn't practice. So there I am at practice, you know, and I can watch everybody and I can try to follow along with what's going on as far as the plays we're practicing and stuff like that, but I can't participate. And there's a part of you that feels like you're losing that bond that you have with your teammates because they're putting all the work in and you can't do that right now. Yeah. It's through no fault of your own. There's nothing you do. I mean, there was a time where I had a knee injury. There was a time where I dislocated my shoulder. So there were bouts of time over my high school career that I couldn't play. And those times were rough because you want to be part of the team. That's the best part about team sports is being part of the team. And so I think they do a really good job of capturing in this issue, like how frustrating it is for Can-Can, who's injured, not to be able to participate, and for Knockout, who is kind of being punished for caring about her friend and kind of being shunned by her team. Each of them, in their own different way, have lost that connection to the rest of their teammates. And so this first issue is kind of setting up the fact that both of them are feeling kind of isolated from the thing that they joined roller derby to be a part of in the first place. And so, I mean, overall, what this series has done a great job of from the get-go is making you care about these characters while also giving you an inside look at like why people do this. Why be a part of a roller derby team? Why join this? What does it do for the people that are part of it? And just the camaraderie and the sisterhood and the team building and all that kind of stuff is so great, but you also see how fragile it can be sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, really cool. So man, if you didn't pick up the first volume of Slam, I cannot recommend it highly enough. And the second volume, even though we have a new artist who I think she does a great job with the look of this series, even though someone new is drawing it, still great. Definitely worth picking up.
So I'll be talking about a sports comic in a little bit, but I love reading those things. Like when you were talking about it and, you know, somebody who's injured and you almost, you know, you were the one who was injured. I never had I've always been injured, but never to the point of, you know, like especially during a championship or important games. I've never been out like that. You have people that are there and you almost, if you're playing still, you have to kind of look at them like they're not part of the team. I've got to focus on this. And it's a really tough thing. It is really bad. And I wish every kid could play sports because it teaches you the life lessons that you need. Very much so.
Yeah.
And that's all Matt talks about sports.
Yeah. There you go. I agree. I mean, I agree in the sense that I think a team sport or a team activity, like it doesn't have to be football or baseball or basketball or whatever. My daughter's in cheerleading right now. And just like having that support group, especially when you go into high school.
Yeah.
You know, and you're in, there's a million things that you have to adjust to in high school, but to have a peer group that supports you, whatever the activity is, that's important.
Yeah.
Because it can be a very isolating experience if you don't have those connections with people.
Yeah. So talking about a book that was one of the biggest, if not the biggest seller of the last month, that is Secret Empire number 10. This is the end of the Secret Empire series, but not the end of everything that's going to be going on.
All questions are answered. All secrets revealed.
Until the next issue of the new series that's going to be coming out for a little bit, leading into the new Marvel. But a lot of this, after I read Captain America 25, a lot of this really kind of closed up all the doors that you might want.
Close the loop for you.
So you have an Iron Captain America who is wearing his Hydra colors and, you know, all armored looking in front of the Capitol building. And he's telling everybody, you know what? It's time right now for healing. It's time right now that we fix this, that we need to stop fighting right now. I understand that you're mad at me. I understand that, but you're too late to win and you need to realize it's time to rebuild. And all the heroes are kind of looking around like, wow, that's something that Cap really would say. But then he starts off with the, we need to rebuild to a country and a world that is bigger than it was, better than it was, stronger than it was. And then they're like, oh yeah, there's that Hydra crap again. Because he is wearing the colors of Hydra now. He's no longer Captain America looking. So you've got old Wolverine that goes, I'm going to stop you right there, bub. Feel safe saying that you ain't going to get any takers in this crowd. And you've got Hulk there, Ms. Marvel. Captain Marvel. And Hawkeye is pulling his bow back going, okay, let's get this son of a blank. Avengers, assemble. And you've got a pretty good team there that are getting ready to go at him, including the aforementioned characters. But you've got Black Panther who's there. You do have Ms. Marvel. You've got Rocket Raccoon who's there. Storm is there, Spider-Man. And they all converge on him, and they are wailing on him. They're hitting Captain America. And as they're narrating this, they're saying, you know, the Avengers were always there as a team. We fought and have battled everybody. Anybody who's ever tried to take over this world, we fought them back. And then you see as they are on top of Captain America, the star on his uniform is glowing, and they say, we don't stand a chance. Because they do realize that he's got power of the Cosmic Cube
right
now inside of his uniform. And you are seeing that once the Avengers all go down, he is talking about the fact that, you know what, right now, I am going to remake history the way that I want it to be. You have a thing that says, the Daily Bugle, Hydra astronauts return from space with strange powers. Fantastic Four. You have Hydra assemble for the Avengers. You've got mutant revolutionaries executed by the state. You see Professor Xavier getting ready to be hung. You've got Arnim Zola, where it says something about Hydra's altered spider super-powered results. And you've got Peter Parker there, young Steve Ditko-looking Peter Parker with a Hydra armband.
Uh-huh.
So you're seeing that Cap has now rewritten history. And as the shadows and the destruction in DC start to get covered up, you're starting to see everything come back, but with a Hydra twist to it. And I thought that that was super, super cool looking. And Cap is looking over and he's like, it's done. And then you've got Falcon show up and go, you know, a wise man once said to me, it's not over till the fat lady sings. And he says, I heard you were looking for this. And he's like, oh, the last cube replacement, the fragment. You planning to use that? And then as he's talking, you see in the background, you've got Bucky, who we saw in Cap 25, who came back, and Ant-Man. And Ant-Man is saying, now? And then Bucky's like, get ready. So as Falcon and Cap get a little bit closer, they start talking. And then Falcon goes down on one knee and says, Hail Hydra. And he's like, this is a surprise. And he hands him the shard. Now, this is the shard that dude puked
up. It's the barf shard.
Barf shard.
Yeah.
I like that. Barf shard. And he says, okay, well, great. So he gives him the shard and he goes, and you also have something else that belongs to me.
Or the cosmic puke.
I like that too. And he hands him a shield. And as he hands him the shield, he takes the piece and puts it into the star that's glowing on his chest. And then all of a sudden, he's like, the power, I can feel it all over the place. And then it just stops. And he goes, the cube, where did it go? And then all of a sudden, he goes down and you see Ant-Man grow. And then all of a sudden, Bucky comes out. And then you see how it says moments earlier, they talk about how this whole plan is that they're going to jump in the shard. As Cap starts putting the shard into his chest, Ant-Man is going to shrink down Bucky. They're going to jump on it, and they're going to go inside this thing where the Cosmic Cube is. And as this is going on, you have Captain America, you have Steve Rogers, that is walking around. It's sort of that one where he was living in his own reality, and I thought that this was truly who Cap was, and it really is who Cap is. And he's looking around. He's looking for Cubic, who is just a little girl.
Right, she's like the personification of the Cosmic Cube.
But she's become more of a little girl, and she is hiding underneath a desk in a burned-out building. And she's saying, I'm sorry, I messed up really bad. I just wanted everybody to be happy. I made a mistake. It's horrible. He's horrible. And Steve goes, you know what? It's okay right now. Why don't you come on out and we're going to make this work? But if you keep hiding in here, we're not going to be able to fight back. And he goes, you stand and you fight. So he gives her the lecture that Captain America would. And as they start walking out, you hear Steve echo throughout. And he looks up and goes, Bucky? And it's almost like we'll follow the light. You see the light open up. They jump in. And you see the scene where Bucky's reaching out going, give me your hand. And Cap's kind of having that freak out moment about, oh, my God, I remember last time one of us reached out for somebody, they fell into the water and the bomb blew up and you blew up on it. And then that is when everything starts to fall apart for Cap. He's like, where is it? Where's the cube? And pretty much they gave it back to Cubic. And Cubic comes out of this little circle, and she is now a confident-looking young girl in, like, this cool blue costume. And I'm wondering if she is going to stay part of the Marvel Universe, because I really like her as a character.
As the living embodiment of the Cosmic Cube.
I really, really like that. And then all of a sudden, all the gold and glitz and hydrified of Washington, D.C. now starts to turn to rubble and go back to the old thing. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, our Cap shows up. So Cap is back, and he looks at him. He goes, you're not real. And he goes, well, yeah, I'm pretty much M. He goes, it's time that you saw the truth. And then they start going back and forth about, you know, you're a traitor. You've always been a traitor to your cause. And he goes, you know, that shield doesn't belong to you. And then he puts down his visor, and he says, if you want it so bad, take it. And that is where the two of them have this massive battle, and they go on and on. And as this battle is going on, you're seeing people watching this and kind of really realizing that the fate of their lives depends on who wins this fight.
Right.
And the fight is going on. They both knock each other down, and it's like one of these wrestling moments where all of a sudden they're both down and knocked out. And the ref
Hulkamania.
The ref's doing the count.
They start shaking. He raises his hand up.
Yep. They both do that. They both get up and they start raising and walking over. And then they look over and they see Thor's hammer there. Now, Thor's hammer is there, and instead of having that inscription about the mighty Thor, it says, blah, 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 Hydra. So all of a sudden, Bad Cap gets to it first, and he goes to pick it up, and he can't pick it up. And he's like, no, I was worthy of this. I don't know what's going on. And then Cap grabs him, knocks his hand out of the way, and says, here, let me give it a try. Picks it up and smashes him right into unconsciousness.
Yep.
Looks like a Rob Liefeld picture, too. I just showed you that. But it had a Rob Liefeldian feel to it. So he knocks him out, knocks all his armor off, and then he comes crashing to the ground and then looks down and says, never again. And then he looks over at the Avengers and he says, you know, we've got to fix this. As he holds the hammer, he says, he gives the shield to Falcon and says, this belongs to you. Doesn't belong to me. Gives it back to him. And then he goes, I think this belongs to somebody else, too. And lets go of the hammer. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, the hammer is going to go back to Thor. It goes to the Thor girl. So Thor girl gets the hammer.
You mean Jane Foster.
That's who, because I don't know what it is. So Jane Foster gets the hammer. Everybody's now looking at the wreckage of the city. But all of a sudden, Cubic, between power of Cubic and the hammer and everything else, the power goes around and basically cleans up and fixes up the entire world. And as you start to go through the end of it in the epilogue, you have people that are in like Times Square looking up. And all holding candles, and everybody's there celebrating. You see, it looked like Damage Incorporated starting to do the cleanup in DC. You see some funerals, and you also see people being released from prison. One of them is Puke Guy, and the guy walks up to him and says, "Hey, I got just sign on this line, and you'll be free to go and get out of here." And he gets out, and as he gets out, you see his younger brother. That at the beginning of the story that was getting picked on at school that took the lunchbox, go in and he gets the kid out of school, brings him home. The kid falls asleep and he go back to the house where the house has Hail Hydra spray painted on it. It's all boarded up and he's looking around going, what a mess. And he goes, you know what? Is it going to be okay? Did the good guys win the fight? And Puker guy goes, yep, good guys won. Now good night. So he walks in and, he's an Inhuman. So it's all anti-Inhuman stuff written in the living room, and he starts to fall asleep on the couch. And then all of a sudden he hears noise outside, and he gets up and he starts walking outside. And you hear, oh, there you are. Good morning, Brian. And you see a bunch of people out there, including the teacher that was criticizing the kid at the beginning of this entire thing, saying, you know, we are sorry about what happened. We're sorry about the noise, but we want to fix your house up and we want to do this. And you see the whole neighborhood there fixing up the house and cleaning up the house and getting it ready. And that's the end of that. And then it says next issue, Secret Empire Omega. So we have that next. So I don't know how many that is going to be. But all in all, a good story that I thought, again, people just needed to relax, take a deep breath, and wait for the story to end.
If it ever will end.
It's not going to end now because we got Omega.
Let's go to a story that I hope never ends. And that is Giant Days, another Boom Box comic, number 29. Now, I've said it time and time and time again. Giant Days is the best comic ever. It is amazing, and I continue to love this comic. Created and written by John Allison, pencils by Max Sarin, inks by Liz Fleming, editors Shannon Waters and Jasmine Amiri. Now, this book is about Esther and Daisy and Susan, three young women who live together at college, and their friends, their group of people around them, and it is such a wonderful slice of college life mixed with a little bit of the absurd that, to me, I feel like it should be – this feels like it should be a British comedy. It really does. It feels like it should be a show on the BBC that we get to watch every week. I hope that someday it gets adapted into something else because it is truly amazing. So we start this one off, and you have Esther, who is kind of – she's very gothy. She is coming walking in with her glasses on. She's dressed up really nice. She's coming walking into class, and she's walking in like she owns the place. And people are like, who's that girl? She's amazing. And she's walking with this confidence. I heard she was kicked out of Harvard for making all the other students look stupid and all this kind of stuff. And she walks in. And you have the professor who's saying, oh, good morning, Esther. And she said, good morning, Mr. Cronkite. And he actually looks like Walter Cronkite. And he's saying, who could take a leaf out of that young lady's book? You could take a leaf out of that young lady's book if you want to get ahead. And they start asking questions, and she immediately raises her hand. So he says, I forget what he was asking her, but she's like answer after answer after answer. And she's in her head. She's saying, who has the best answers? Who asked the most insightful questions? Who was born to take romantic literature 204? Me, Esther DeGroot, accept no substitutes. And she's like the best student in the class. This is her subject, which if you think back to your college days or even your high school days, like everybody has a subject or a class where they feel like, I know what I'm doing in this class,
yeah.
And I am, you know, I'm going to be.
I did have one of those.
Yeah, there you go. And it feels great to be in that class. And like when you were in your marketing classes and stuff like that, like there's always a class where you're like, I got this on lockdown.
Yeah.
Like, this is my class. And that's how she feels about this class. Well, sure enough, just as she is in the zone, making herself look great, answering all the questions of the professor, someone else comes walking in the class. And it is a young woman who I cannot remember the name of when she comes in, but she is dating Susan's old boyfriend. So Esther doesn't like her because this is the girl that's dating her best friend's old boyfriend. So she automatically doesn't like her, but this young woman comes into class. Oh, Amelia. So Amelia comes in, and at first the professor is like, I mean, next time show up to class on time. She's like, oh, I just transferred in here and stuff like that. But as soon as he starts talking, she has more insightful and more comprehensive answers than Esther had to any of the questions. So she immediately comes in and steals Esther's thunder. And when Esther walks out of class, she's like, unbelievable. That was my classroom. Now I hate this person. So she's got this rivalry going, and she's telling Susan about it when they're at the diner. She's like, you would not believe it. She came in, she made me look bad. This is my class. And Susan's like, just get over it, man. She's fine. And Esther's like, why are you so okay with this? This is the girl that's dating your old boyfriend. And she's like, you know what? I got to let go of that stuff. I can't be like that anymore. It's killing me. And Esther's having none of it. She's like, I'm going to take her down. This is what's going to happen. I'm going to figure out a way. So that's the story that's going on with them. Now we go over to Daisy and her friend Ed, who is a guy who was very smitten with Daisy when school first started. And she wants nothing to do with him. And so, but she's his best friend. And so the two of them are talking, and he comes to class and he's dressed in jean overalls, if you remember those.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got a braid going behind his left ear. And they're talking, and you can see the monologue inside of her head is just like, that braid. Like, she can't not focus
tail.
On it. Yeah, and he's like, is something bothering you? Oh, no, everything's fine. 2 seconds later, she's like, I can't even look at the braid. I can't even look at it. And he's like, you don't like it? And she's like, you've gone full Anakin here. I can't stand it. Like, it's terrible. And she's like, what is wrong with you? And he's like, look, girls don't like me. I'm trying to reinvent myself. I'm trying to try a new style out, maybe try to be a little bit more interesting, try to have a little air of mystery about myself. And she says, yeah, but you can't do that with the braid. She's like, leave it to me. I will help you find someone. I will figure it out. I will hook you up with someone. And he's like, can you stop staring at my hair? And she says, that is literally the most egregious thing I have ever seen. I don't even know how you can live with yourself. Like, she's just hammering him for that. So those are kind of the two storylines that you see in this issue, is that you have Esther, who is now developing a rivalry with this girl, Amelia, who doesn't even – Amelia has no bad feelings towards her. She likes her just fine. And the problem is, as much as Esther wants to hate her, she's a likable person.
Yeah.
And it just makes Esther more frustrated. So Esther goes into class one day, and the guy who's teaching the class is a published author. And so she goes in with copies of all his books and is like, oh, I'm your biggest fan. Can you sign my books for me? Feeds his ego a little bit in order to get ahead in class.
Yeah.
And the other kids are like, boy, that was a desperate move. But she has now caught his eye. And what she doesn't realize is the teacher's a creep. And so he thinks that she's coming on to him, mm-hmm. and decides, oh, you know, all the students, we're having a gathering in a few days of like all the students who are in this particular class. You guys should come to that. And so her and Amelia are both scheduled to go to this event. And you have Esther, who's telling Susan later, I'm going to use this event to embarrass Amelia. I'm going to make her look bad. The teacher already is starting to like me more. He's going to hate her now. And then my revenge will be complete. And Susan's like, again, I feel like this is going to go badly for you. And of course, she doesn't listen. So now we go back over to Daisy and Ed. And Daisy is going on all these dating apps. She's trying to find, you know, matches for Ed. And she ends up setting up a date for him with a young woman who has all the same interests as him. She's into sci-fi. She's nerdy like he is. And he is like so nervous about it. But this woman comes in. And I forget what her name was, but Kathy. She's great. She comes in totally, you know, very laid back. They go to a movie together. It's a Buck Rogers movie. It's the big screen adaptation of Buck Rogers.
Oh, nice.
And she's like, geez, I'm sorry if I'm nervous. She says to Ed, she's like, but Buck Rogers is one of my favorite fandoms, and I'm worried that the reboot is going to damage my headcanon. And he's like, oh, is there a Buck Rogers fandom? Like, is that a big deal? And she's like, no, that's why I chose it, because I could get in there and be one of the best people in the in the Buck Rogers fandom. And you have, what is the name of the robot?
Tweaky.
Tweaky is a giant mech that is laying waste to cities like Godzilla. And he's like, bitty, bitty, bitty. And he's taking out all these cities, and she's flipping out because she's watching it, and it's just awful. So they walk out, and she's like, I'm extremely angry, Ed, extremely angry. And they're talking about the movie, but then she immediately comes out and she's like, that was a really good time. And they actually had a great time together. And she's like, we should do this again. And he immediately backs away. So she's like, oh, okay, maybe like another time or something like that. And he goes home, and he basically ruined the end of the date because it went great. And then he like got cold feet and kind of walked away. So now we go over to the party that is happening at this professor's place, and all the people are there, and Esther is in her best dress, and she's making, you know, conversation with everybody, and she's holding court. And all of a sudden she hears music in the background, and the look, I'll just show you, that she gives when she turns her face around, because she realizes that the music is coming from this girl, Amelia, who has brought, you know, like a musical instrument and is playing and singing for everybody. And she's like, I freaking hate this girl. So she starts stuffing her face at the cheese table. And as she's doing that, the creepo professor comes over and he's like, I don't know, how are you having a good time? And she's like, I don't know, I think it's going to be a long night. And he says, why don't you have some wine? So he starts feeding her wine. She starts getting drunk. And as the night goes on and the party starts, you know, people start leaving, and it wasn't at his place, it was at somebody else's place, he's now trying to get Esther to come home with him. And she's so drunk that she's about to do it. Well, who comes in but this girl, Amelia, who Esther has been trying to embarrass, and basically saves her from that situation and says, oh, there you are, Esther. I was looking for you. We have to walk home together. Thanks for finding her, professor. You know, we'll see you at class. And she swoops in and basically saves her. And that is the beginning of the two of them becoming friends. So now we go back to Ed, and Ed is trying to explain to Daisy how the date didn't work out, and she loses her mind on him. She's like, this girl was perfect for you. She has all the same interests as you. What is your problem? This is a perfect match for you. I don't understand where you're coming from. And he's basically saying, well, you know, I'm worried that it didn't feel like a lightning bolt the first time I met her. And it didn't, you know, I don't think she's the one. And if I settle, then what's going to happen if the one comes along all, you know, later on? And she's like, you're looking for a unicorn. Like, you have to give her a chance to surprise you, because I think you're going to find out that she could really be the perfect match for you. And so they're walking out, and she's kind of trying to talk to him about that. And she looks over and she sees that Esther and this girl, Amelia, are now hanging out as best friends. And Daisy's like, holy crap, she's been assimilated. Now we got to save her. We have to save her because of Susan and all that kind of stuff. And that's the way the issue ends. So what I love, love, love about that series is that not only do you get these sort of slice of life situations, and for me, it just so much brings me back to my college days. I can't even stand how well that this creative team nails that vibe of things that seem really important when you're in college.
Yeah.
That you look back on now, and in some cases they are important, and in some cases they aren't important, but they're all these memories that are sort of tied in, and it's just like, it's so great. I literally hope that series never ends. I love it. It's the first book I read every time that it comes out. Giant Days is amazing.
Very nice. So the final book I'll be talking about today is a book called The Dodgeball Teens. Now, we have been speaking about this book for an awful long time. This is the latest issue, number 7, written and drawn and edited and produced and created and everything by our good friend Emilio Velez Jr., who we saw at Terrificon this year. Emilio is an amazing artist, a great guy, and he has captured the feel of something that a lot of us might not even relate to or be able to, because we know dodgeball from school. I loved playing dodgeball. I remember making jokes when I first saw this book and we first got to know Emilio, and we're like, oh my God, I wish there was professional dodgeball. I'd go play that in a second. And he turns around and tells us there is.
And then every time we see him, he has jerseys from all of these dodgeball, like these semi-pro dodgeball teams, these amazing jerseys.
Yep.
And he's telling us about, oh yeah, no, the Las Vegas league here, and then in New Jersey, this league over here. Like, there is a thriving dodgeball community that you and I have never even scraped the surface of. Like, to me, it reminds me a lot of roller derby, right?
Where you're like,
and then you're like, holy crap, there's a whole thing.
Yeah, and what was the San Diego team? Do you remember what the name of them was?
It was like the San Diego Doom or something like that.
I went online to try to find out what it was, but the problem I had, there was like 19 different leagues in California.
Right.
For dodgeball.
Yep.
What is really cool was, like, you know, Emilio was so passionate about it, and he's talking about how, he goes, you know, there's some leagues that you can squeeze the ball and throw it. Others you have to palm it and throw it.
Yep.
And that's a completely different set of different rules.
I'm not a fan
of
squeezing.
Oh, but squeezing a ball comes into play in this issue.
It gives you too much control.
Yep.
That should not be allowed.
So Coach Michelle Hardy is the coach of the Extremes, which is the dodgeball team in this show, in this comic, that is made up of her two daughters, her son, and a bunch of their friends. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 on the team. And she is always trying to coach them to be better. And what I love about this is the life lessons that you get out of this are freaking amazing. And every issue, it's, well, we're going to teach you how to be a better teammate. We're going to teach you how to be more tolerant to people and their personalities and things. But this one right here is really focusing on the history of dodgeball and how it would relate to them. So what the coach has done is she said, I got my old teammates from my old team, and we are going to be here and we are going to talk to you guys about dodgeball and how you guys can become better. And the way that I liken this to is being on a high school team, and all of a sudden they bring a college player in to talk to everybody. My daughter Becky has gone back to two or three of her old teams as a college athlete to go back to talk to them. And the way that young kids look at the heroes of their sport really make me happy to see that. And I'm somebody that loves the history of sport.
Yep.
I know you are as well.
Absolutely.
For me, it isn't enough to like a team. I've got to know everything about them. And with sports, with baseball and hockey especially, I can tell you everything about everybody. And that's just the way I am about it. So I love the history. And what she is trying to do is teach the history. So every young player on the team pairs off with who the coach thinks would be a good group, a good role model for that player to work with. So you've got everybody matched off. And it's really interesting because we talk about the gripping. And there's a scene here where, you know, one of the coaches is like, oh, my favorite throw was I would pick up the ball and I'd squeeze it and whip it. And he's like, whoa, 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 I can't do that. I have no control. So she's going to teach him how to do that and show control. And it's just a great opportunity for people to nurture one another. People, and you see that the diversity of the team, that this coach has is the same diversity of the team she had when she was younger, which is great. You've got the older black player playing with the young black player, kid from Canada playing and learning from the kid from the kid from Canada, the adult from Canada. You've got some of the girls that are talking about, you know, it wasn't easy for us to play this. We had to really break through to fight to get the right to play dodgeball with boys. And the girls are more like, well, we just signed up. And then you see them teaching them about, you know, this is the stuff we had to go through. This is the stuff that we had to fight. So after some sessions, they're like, you know what? We're all set for our next match. We've got a match against a team that's better than us. But we think that we've got a lot of these things, a lot of the intangibles that we've learned. But before, they can all go out to a restaurant called Orange Bees to go eat.
I like that, Orange Bees.
Yep, they're going to go to Orange Bees. A door slams. And you've got the bad professor who's been in here all the time, Dr. Van Sprockets, and his dodgeball robot is going to kidnap the team. But he's not going to kidnap the team. He's going to kidnap the adults and their coach. And he's going to suck out all their knowledge and become a better dodgeball player.
Oh.
And maybe put it into some people. So as he's got them all pinned up against the wall, they're getting their powers and stuff sapped out of them and all their memories. The dodgeball teens show up the extremes, and they're like, well, this is kind of weird. We've got a match, and our mother missed it. You know, we slaughtered the other team, but why did mom miss it? And where was everybody else? We thought they were going to be here to share in our victory. And then they realize that something is going on, and then they realize when something is really bad because a clipboard is on the ground, and the clipboard has all these notes, a schedule, and they're like, mom would never lose that and leave that. So they start running around the gym, they're looking around, and then they realize that they have to go to Dr. Sprockett's lab. And good thing it says labs on the front of the place.
Yeah,
they never
it's important.
Find it. So he's in there, he's like, oh, I've sucked all your memories and your power out and all this stuff, and this is how it's gonna be. But the teens jump in, they break down the door, they save the day, and unfortunately, before they start to fight the robot, because they cannot take on the robot, their mascot Rodney, who's a big head dodgeball guy in a Superman suit, shows up and he's going to take on the robot, but the robot knocks him down a bunch of times. And then the kid who learned how to squeeze the ball and grip it says, I got a plan. I know how we can do this. So he picks up the mascot, he clamps him from behind, and it's great because the sound effect is clamp. And the Rodney's going, whoa, Jose, that hurts. And he goes, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. This is going to fix
everything.
Pain is only temporary. So he whips him into the robot. Robot gets knocked down on Dr. Sprockets. They release everybody. They get everybody back. They don't lose their minds. They don't lose their powers, anything like that. And Dr. Sprockets is left to try to figure out what he's going to do next. And that's how that story ends. And then there's a great story in here about the pizza showdown and how the two sisters decide that they're going to have a dodgeball throwdown to save that last pizza, or who's going to eat it. So once again, on issue number 7, Emilio captures the heart, the charm of one of those books. And we always talk about how great, there's some great kid comic books out there. And I think sometimes I forget to mention Dodgeball Teens as one of them. Emilio writes to any level of reader. And I love seeing his success. I love meeting his family. When you go to a show and you see his family there, they are nothing but supportive of Emilio. And it's just great. So Dodgeball Teens, definitely check it out.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up our books this week, Matthew, with The Amazing Spider-Man number 31, written by Mr. Dan Slott, penciled by Stuart Immonen, inked by Wade Von Grabadger, colors by Marte Garcia, letters by our good buddy Joe Caramagna, a cover by Mr. Alex Ross, and edited by Nick Lowe.
Your art team on that book is freaking amazing.
It's amazing, dude.
I love Stuart and Wade. They're such a great team together.
And they have been amazing the whole time. And then you got the Alex Ross covers on every issue. It's crazy. What has been happening, if you remember from the last time we talked about Amazing Spidey, is that while this whole Secret Empire thing has been going on, Doc Ock, in a brand new body that he basically made for himself, has decided to work with Hydra for now. And he worked with Hydra so he could gain access to their technology and gain access to the amount of soldiers and everything that they have. And he has used them as his own private force to go and attack Parker Industries. So he has taken down their offices in London, in New York, and San Francisco. But Peter has made his way to the Shanghai office, which is the last one where Otto broke in. And in the last issue, basically explained to Peter that because he helped create all this technology, he can control it. Mm. And so Peter was going to send all the vehicles after him, and Doc Ock took control out of all of them. And he's essentially explaining to Peter, like, you know, I'm the one who started this company when I was Peter Parker. And now you've come along, and all this stuff that you think that you do and all this stuff that you think that you invented, it's all because of me. And now I'm coming back to claim it. And he says, you know, all this time, you've been acting like an inferior copy of me. You know, now you're this Spider-Man who goes out and you try to take out your enemies before they try anything scary. You're doing the preemptive stuff that I was doing as Superior Spider-Man. And now you're sort of patting yourself on the back. Well, I'm here to take it all away from you. And I'm going to take away all of the technology that you have in your data banks here at your last location. I'm going to take all of it, all the schematics, all of everything. I'm taking it all back. And then you're going to have nothing. And Peter's like, I'm going to punch you in the face now, and you're going to lose. And so a lot of the issue is them battling back and forth, but that's Otto's plan, is he's going to go in and he's going to steal every bit of technology that Parker Industries has ever created. So in the meantime, Peter has been in contact with a couple of the scientists at Parker Industries, and he's been telling them, you know, Doc Ock is controlling all of this technology and using it against us. He's got to be doing it with some sort of a frequency. Find out what the frequency is, and then we can stop him from doing all of this. So he's got people working on that while he's trying to distract Doc Ock. And he's got one of the people that works for him. I can't remember if his name is Leanne or something, but she is driving one of the spider vehicles, and she's kind of trying to keep Doc Ock busy. And Peter's trying to put his plan in action, and he's stalling Doc Ock just long enough to enact like what he considers to be the nuclear option, where he goes in and he talks to all the people in the office and he says, look, tonight Doc Ock is knocking down our front door, but tomorrow he could be sneaking in through the back door. If he does, all the work that we've done here would be twisted into helping the worst people on Earth. And so we can't let him get that stuff. So we know what we have to do. It's been an honor building this company with all of you. Now we have to tear it down. And he turns to Doc Ock and he says over the intercom, I hope you hear this, Parker Industries is no more. Mm. And so basically he's deciding to erase every bit of data, get rid of every bit of technology that Parker Industries has ever put together in order to keep Doc Ock from getting that. And of course, Ock is furious. He's like, what idiot would destroy a global empire just to keep it out of my hands? Who could be so petty? And then he's like, Peter Parker, that's who's so petty. And so again, you're giving these villains who have had this rivalry with Parker. And to me, and I've talked to Dan Slott about this, to me, he has elevated Doc Ock into the best Spider-Man villain. And now he has just another reason to hate him, because again, in Ock's mind, he created all this technology. And now Parker is taking that away from him too. Just another reason to hate Peter Parker. So they're battling to a standstill. And the people who work for Parker Industries, they destroy the whole place from the inside. They destroy all the computers. They wipe all the hard drives. They destroy everything. And there's some touching moments in there where you have, you know, one of the scientists is saying, all my research, I was so close. I was creating a perfect green energy source. And the other guy reminds him, or it could be a weapon in the wrong hands, you know, and he's saying, you know, I have faith in you. You're gonna get this one day. But now we have to do our part. We have to take this stuff down. But I think Slott is planting the seed for this one guy who is not going to get rid of his research because he doesn't want to lose it. And so you see those sort of seeds being planted. But at the end of the day, as the fight rages on, in order for Peter to keep everybody else safe, he has to let Doc Ock get away. You know, and when Doc gets away, because he has a new face and a new body and everything else, as soon as he takes his mask off, he's basically invisible to Peter because Peter doesn't know what he looks like anymore. And so he ends up getting away. But when Doc Ock goes back to Hydra, Hydra's like, dude, you did a great job. You took down Parker Industries. How awesome is that? Because they see this as him having this great victory, whereas Ock is basically thinking, this son of a gun just ruined everything that I helped create. And you have – who is the one that has the it's an Arnim Zola whose face is inside the robot
body. Yeah, it's Arnim Zola.
Oh, it is Arnim Zola.
Yep.
He's saying, you know, Captain America wanted me to pass along his compliments and to let you know that he believes that you are one of his finest soldiers. And Ock is thinking in his head, soldier? I'm not some pawn or minion. I should be king, ruler of my own empire. And I'm a lackey here. He's like, all that work, everything I built now lies in ruins. I shall not forget this, Parker. Someday soon, I swear, there shall be a reckoning. And this is the way that storyline ends. Now, I don't know if this is the last issue of Amazing Spider-Man before the legacy stuff kicks in, but I am very hopeful that we are going to see more Doc Ock as time moves on, because again, the elevation of him as this central villain for Spidey and this rival for Spidey who has been in Spidey's head and understands the way that he thinks. It's great, man.
Yeah.
It is really great. Like it is, in a way, it has shades of the original Venom idea where you had the symbiote who had been in Parker's brain and now bonded to Eddie. It has shades of like Kraven's Last Hunt. It has all this kind of stuff mixed into it. So I just love that dynamic between Spidey and between Doc Ock. But what you're seeing here is you're seeing that Dan Slott is dismantling what has been the status quo for Spidey over the past few years, which makes sense as they're moving into this more meat and potatoes.
Like, yes.
I got to bring Peter back to New York. I don't know that he's going to be a photographer for the Daily Bugle again, but clearly his status as this international businessman and scientist is going to start to go by the wayside. And I think that's the next arc.
He's got to be the lovable loser again.
Right. Well,
somebody relatable.
Right. We have to bring him back closer to the Spidey that everybody knows and loves. I think the one thing that fans are not going to get when that happens is the Mary Jane piece.
Yeah.
That is never coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until there is a complete sea change of creative talent at Marvel, the whole Mary Jane, Peter being married thing, that's gone.
Yeah.
So, but I think a lot of the other stuff will start to reset again as we go. But yeah, another great issue of Amazing Spider-Man. So there you go. That's your books for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week. Go watch Dread, and we'll talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.